You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
Welcome to Connecting the Dots, where Mark Shea talks using words borrowed from the English language. Oh, and welcome.
I'm sorry.
Welcome to our show this fine Monday afternoon. We are here today with two of my favorite people. The first is my Monday co-host, Sherry Antonetti.
Hello.
Hello, Sherry. And the second is disgraced former host. Not really. No, actually, he's just gone on to bigger and better things, which is why we wanted to have him back on today. Mr. Tom McDonald.
Hello. Hey. Hi, hey. Gang. I'm glad to be back in the bread box.
Glad to have you
back.
Let
me out. He's bigger than a bread box.
And we decided to have Tom on today because Tom just had a big epic adventure, which we thought this would be, you know, you could practically, if we could do it without breaking some copyright law right now, I would be playing the theme to Raiders of the Lost Ark because he just had a big adventure out in Jordan. So we thought we'd have Tom on to share about that. And we might wind up talking about, who knows, Jordanian ghosts or something as well. No. You just never know with Tom, which is why he's always so fun to have on the show. How's it going, Tom?
I'm doing well. I miss hanging out in the bread box. I hope all you guys have been taking care of business without me. But No, I'm still back. It's taken me almost a full week to recover because I was falling asleep at 9 and waking up at 3, and, you know, the jet lag was vicious, you know, so because it's a 7-hour time difference. I'm finally almost back to normal, whatever that is in my world. And my microphone keeps dropping. Sorry. Hopefully I'm not making noise trying to fix it. But it was an amazing trip. It was life changing. And I recommend it to everybody who can afford to go. Now, just to be clear, this was a promotional something or other. I don't know what I'm supposed to call this. This is the Jordanian Tourism Board sponsored some journalists and bloggers to go to Jordan to investigate the Holy Land, because Jordan is not seen as the Holy Land, which is very strange because half of what happens takes place in Jordan. And some of the stuff that some places claim happened in, you know, one of them, namely the baptism of Jesus, there's a Bethany. There are two Bethanies, and the very strange thing is they claim that the Bethany on the one side of the river in Israel is the Bethany where the baptism happened, though, of course, the Bible tells us John preached in Bethany beyond the Jordan, which means the Jordan River. So he was on the western side or the eastern side. He was on the other side of the river doing his John thing. So
his John thing.
Some of your pictures of the River Jordan, and it's what we here out west call the Jordan Creek.
Jordan Creek. Well, it's funny. There's it changes, and the weird thing is John didn't baptize in the river. We're skipping around, but since we started here,
Begin at the beginning.
I could just monopolize your show then. Why don't I begin with the bagpipes?
Because
we arrive at Jordan and, you know, we're changing our money and meeting our fellow pilgrims because it's Catholics and Episcopalians and a couple of evangelicals and a large contingent of, I'm putting fake air quotes around this, progressive Catholics.
Okay.
And while we're there, a sudden sound just fills the airport. And, you know, large sudden noises in Middle Eastern airports do tend to get your attention.
Right. Yeah. It was a funeral.
It was drumming, and it was It's Pock's funeral, yes. It was bagpipes and poppers going off, and it looked like somebody, a very young man being hoisted on shoulders coming back on his flight from college abroad because he had his mortarboard on, so people knew that's why he's being celebrated. And they had greeted him at the airport with a full contingent of noisemakers, including
bagpipes,
including improperly played bagpipes. And it was not the last time I would hear bagpipes in the Middle East, apparently. Well, if you've ever heard the call to prayer, the keening sound has a very bagpipey type quality to it.
There's a proper way to play bagpipes.
Yes, there is. Okay. Not, of squeezing, not just blowing.
Okay.
You know, so...
just had to ask.
Yeah. So, and the other incident was we were traveling there with Jack Morrow from Alitalia, who does the Daily Catch. And
yes.
Somebody shoved their baby into his arms and took his picture. And it was like, you know, they're beaming and stuff. And they go away. And we realize because of his appearance, they thought he was Jack Black.
Okay.
And apparently Jack Black's popular in Jordan because this happened more than once.
That is pretty weird. Okay.
Well, the thing about Jordan is you have to realize it's a very, very peaceful country. Paris is more dangerous than Jordan. Jordan has not had a lot of terrorist attacks. Jordan made peace with Israel. Jordan
is a badass king.
Yeah, they really do. And he's educated, all Western educated. Actually was in college at Georgetown at the same time as my wife. They were both at Georgetown in the late 80s at the same
time. Interesting.
Cool.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, so we're pals. But the Christians are fully part of the culture, and the Muslim-Christian relations are very strong. There is a Christian tribe that's known, Hadad. If you meet somebody with the last name Hadad, that's known to be a Christian tribe. And we met Father Nabil Hadad, the leader of the Melkite Catholics, who we worshipped with. And he's this great, you know, big, giant-hearted man who had just finished opening up this, in his Melkite church, the St. Francis Center, which is designed to bring Arabs and Christians, you know, I say that wrong. The Christians are Arabs. Bring Muslims and Christians in to learn English, to learn trades, to talk together. And it was interesting. While I was there, his chief engineer, he didn't speak English, but he stopped Father Nabil. And he gave him a message because he knew who we are. And his name is Ahmed. And Father Nabil said, Ahmed wanted you to know that he wanted this job as a Muslim because he wanted to show these people who were saying, you know, these things. You know, basically, I think he was referring to ISIS, that Muslims and Christians can live in peace and brotherhood.
Oh, wonderful.
You know,
and
awesome.
Just so great.
So my experience there, first of all, the airport had, and I have a picture of it up, was selling tiny little tacky neon orange pocket Qurans next to rosary beads. So you could plastic.
I'm trying to imagine that and process that in my head.
Yeah, I should. I've got the pictures on my Facebook page. I think I made all those public. And crosses were in all the gift shops. The Christian sites were all well-maintained. And what they're trying to do is, because Israel is considered the Holy Land and has a very good tourism program, which is odd because Israel's about 1,000 times more dangerous than Jordan.
Uh-huh.
Jordan's very, very safe, actually. Not very clean. I do have to add my criticism that they're about where America was in the 70s in terms of litter. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's clean in that, the hotels are clean and the food and all that. But if somebody's finished with a wrapper driving down the highway, it goes right out the window. So there's loose litter blowing all over the place. So they need a crying Indian there.
They need the don't mess with Texas kind of PR kind of thing happening. Okay.
Yeah, they do. And I think they're working on it. And it's interesting that the historical sites is almost, you know, in America, they'd be roped off and delicate. And there'd be some docent there every 10 yards telling you not to do stuff. It's like the Wild West. You go into some of these places, you know, you go in when we get to talking about Petra. your mind actually can't quite grasp what Petra is. Even if you've seen it on TV, you mm-hmm. don't grasp the sheer living scale of the thing. My walk in and out of Petra was about 8 miles.
Wow.
Some of it vertical. And
okay.
We'll get to that in a minute. But I just wanted to give you a broad picture of the fact that Christianity in this country. Now, we had... It's interesting that these progressive Christians, and I'm imagining air quotes around those every time, because honestly, not that progressive. We had a press conference with the mayor of Amman. You know, here's a man educated by Quakers, okay, who walked out of, I believe out of Israel, out of the territories for 3 days as a child until he got to Jordan and transferred his British mandate passport and exchanged it for a Jordanian one because Jordan offered them citizenship. Okay. And is now the mayor of Amman, a leading target of ISIS and all the rest of that stuff. And somebody said, why can't we proselytize in... Jordan, which I thought was a rather impertinent question if you'd done your homework. And he explained it very well, though, and it's that proselytization, conversion, is a foreign concept to Arabic society because it's tribally based, that this tribe has this faith and that tribe has that faith, and there may be intermarriage, there may be this, that, or the other thing, but conversion, they are a country, a theocracy in the sense that they're under Sharia. They're just under a very mild form of it.
Okay. So that
you can be Christian, but
Sharia-like.
We'll be back in just a minute. You're listening to Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea. We're here today with Sherry Antonetti and the dynamic, exciting, world-traveling Tom McDonald. We'll be back right after this.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Welcome back to Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea, and we are here today with Sherry Antonetti and world traveler and Indiana Jones imitator Tom McDonald.
Yay!
And we're talking about his recent trip to Jordan. If you want to join the conversation, give us a call. We're at 1-573-4-BREAD-4, 1-573-4-BREAD-4. So...
I got a good example of how Christians fit in. We went to a Mother Mercy clinic, which is in Zakab, maybe? Okay, I can't remember. But it's funded by CNEWA, where Deacon Greg works, Catholic Near Eastern Welfare Association, and you should call up their website and give them money right now. And it's staffed by Dominicans, habited Dominican nuns, and it's also staffed by... hijabed Muslim women, and they work side by side. Interesting to see the same concept, the hijab and the habit. You know, you basically had an entire clinic serving the doctor we saw there, saw 100 people a day.
Oh my goodness.
And they're getting a lot of, it's for the poor. It's a 3 dinar, it's about $4 token, donation, and they do all the usual stuff, you know, vaccinations, that kind of stuff, but they're getting a lot of Syrian and Iraqi refugees, and there's a ton, the children have a ton of PTSD. They see a lot of problems. They've got a sociologist there. They see, she told us some details, and it's basically, it's, it, it's a struggle, and the places where they're kept are not healthy, so they have a lot of respiratory problems. But the real vision is seeing all these people working together in one place to serve a community in need. And if they can't play the three dinars, they don't have to. It's a token fee. So Catholic Near Eastern Welfare Association is doing incredible work there. And
wow.
I kept, since we had two register people there, myself and Peter Jesser Smith, at one point we separated, and they did a day with, I believe theirs was Iraqi refugees. That was really just a shattering experience for them, because nobody had bothered to talk to them for like 2 years from the media. And they've just been in this endless holding pattern, being stuck in refugee camps. And all of this, these things, just after having fled their homes. You know, and Jordan's taken in 1.5 million refugees.
Wow.
And they really can't take more, and they're going to take more, because while I was there, you know, Aleppo and Mosul both came under attack. And, you know, we were about 10 miles from the Syrian border, so that kind of thing gets your attention. You know,
yes.
Aleppo's a few hours inland, and Mosul's even further. But those are the events that are pushing these refugees over. And one of the things that gives you a sense of scope, you don't have a sense of, I never had a sense of this, and I'm going to go ahead and say that none of you have a sense of the actual geography and feeling of the Bible until you've actually stood in these places and said, this completely changes everything I ever imagined. So we went to a town ruin called Umkas, that we went out. It's mostly Greco-Roman. You know, it was one of the cities of the Decapolis, and you probably know Umkas better by its biblical name, which is Gadara. So we come up this place, and there's a lot of Roman ruins, and straight in front of me is the Golan Heights. And I'm just looking at it, it's looming over, and then down in the valley is an Israeli settlement. And if I turn my head to the right, a few miles, however, up, you know, up that valley is Syria. Okay, so that's where we were at this juncture point. And it's that catches your attention real quick.
Yeah.
But down to the left is the Sea of Tiberias, and
also known as the Sea of Galilee.
Sea of Galilee, correct. And a hill leading down to it. Now, I don't know. I'm sure you do, but I'm going to pretend you don't.
Okay.
If you know the story of Legion and the story of the Gerasene demoniac, we're told two different things. We're Matthew says it's Gadara. Mark and Luke says it's Gerasa. Now, Gerasa is a town now called Jerash, which I also visited, and it's way too far inland to have been the site of the location. Some people claim Gadara is, but they missed the point that the Gadara we visited, which has a colonnaded Roman street and a forum and a temple maybe to Athena, I'm not sure. And a lot of these ruins and a lot of tombs, a lot of ancient Rome is still present in Jordan.
Wow.
There's a slope that goes straight down. We're talking a pretty large scale here, by the way, that does go straight down to the Sea of Galilee, the Sea of Tiberias. And that would have been, what people don't understand is the dichotomy between Acropolis and Necropolis. The Acropolis, Acropolis with an A, is where living would have been done, and the Necropolis would have been outside the city limits, would have been the city of the dead. And the story of the demoniac takes place, obviously, among the tombs. Matthew tells us it was two demoniacs at Gerasa. Mark and Luke tell us it was at Gadara. Sorry, see, even I'm doing it. Mark and Luke tell us it was two at Gerasa. But clearly it was this particular location, modern-day Umkas, because you can just imagine and you can see Jesus stepping off the water there if you just, you know, use your eyes and imagine for a moment him coming to this place, to this hill of the dead, and finding these men. And you could, you know, use your imagination and see those swine heading into the water after having had the demons cast into them.
Yeah.
And it changes utterly how you see these stories from now on. You don't imagine them the same way. The light has a quality to it that, you know, if you're sensitive to that kind of thing in photography and other things, the ground has a quality to it, the dust, the rock, the shade and the lack of it. The water has a very steely kind of strange, I imagine it's a function of both the water and the light itself. Both have mm-hmm. qualities that you have not seen in America, you know, yeah. or even in most of the Western world, unless you've traveled to that region. So mm-hmm. you now have a different image in your brain of how this whole thing went down. Now, the interesting thing is that same day I went to Jerash, which would have been Gerasa. Now, what that was, what these were the cities of the Decapolis. And, you know, you have a line in Matthew, great crowds followed him from Galilee to the Decapolis. The Decapolis is a series of 10 cities. That's what Decapolis, 10 cities, which is confusing since there's about, you know, 18 or 19 of them at different times, but forget that. But there are 10 named cities that the Romans thought were their cultural centers, and they built them up, and they were places where Jews, Greeks, and Romans all kind of mingled. Umkas was one of them, and a lot has survived there, and they're continuing excavations. Like I said, there's a beautiful colonnated street, which is called Cardo Maximus is what those streets are called in Roman parlance.
Is that the one with all the pillars?
Yes, it's a colonnated road. Yes, they
I
all
see
have
it.
Pillars. Yeah. And Jerash, however, is the largest Roman ruin outside of Rome. And it gets your attention. You go enter through Hadrian's Arch, a victory arch done when Hadrian visited, I think, just before the Bar Kokhba Revolution. I think this was like 130 or so.
Okay.
Somewhere in that period. And it's a grand triumphal Roman art. It's big, I'll tell you that much. And then, you mm-hmm. know, they've got a hippodrome, a theater, and you walk, and what you see, the thing that strikes you most, and Jerash is a very impressive set of ruins, is that here's an old Greek temple to Zeus. And then up the mountain a bit a ways is a newer one that the lower ones collapsed is a Roman temple to Zeus, Jupiter, you know, that survived much better because it's obviously newer. The Romans came after the Greeks. But then you follow the lip of this hill around and you come to one ruined church after another because Christianity settled in here by about 350. I mean, it arrived there in the first century with the apostles. I mean, Christianity had been preached there. Jesus preached Christianity in Jerash.
Right.
Okay.
There you go.
If we're being very clear here, but you know, it takes time to set its roots down. And there's, you know, there's a number of church ruins, Byzantine ruins, a mortuary church, a church of St. Peter's and Paul. And then you go a little further and there's a giant temple to Artemis. And another Cardo, the most impressive Cardo Maximus, you know, colonnaded street, you'll see anywhere, I think, maybe even in Rome. But it's huge. And those Roman roads, they were built to last because they're still there, you know, little mm-hmm. lizards flitting among the rocks. And
wow.
you get a sense walking down, the size of it is immense. And the collision of religions, you know, that you see of these temples, temples and these churches all in the same place. The interesting thing is that it was Hadrian who, on the eve of the Bar Kokhba Revolution, you know, had said, I'll rebuild the temple. He was going to rebuild the temple. And he was advised that this would simply stir up the Jews again. So he didn't. And he turned it into another Roman pagan city.
Okay. Interesting. Well, we will be right back. You're listening to Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea, and we are here today with Sherry Antonetti and Mr. Tom McDonald, world traveling raconteur. And we'll be back right after this.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Hello, and welcome back to Connecting the Dots, where world travelers gather to discuss world travels. That's right. So we are here today with Mr. Tom McDonald. He's talking about his trip to Jordan, Holy Jordan, as he was referring to it, because a great deal of what you read about in the Bible is, you know, the Old Testament Israel, you didn't have these like border markers saying you are now leaving biblical Israel. It was just, sure, Israel was this side of the Jordan. Well, until you got to, you know, Philistia, and then the Philistines didn't think it was Israel anymore.
Right.
There were some contested arguments about that. But also on the other side of the Jordan, you had a lot going on, including, as Tom was talking about, the baptism in the River Jordan when Jesus is baptized. He was baptized, as John tells us, in Bethany beyond Jordan. That means other side of the Jordan, which we call today Jordan.
Right. Transjordan, it was called during the Mandate period.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you think about it, you know, the Edomites and the Moabites and all this stuff, this is the land we were driving over, was Edomites and Moabites and all the rest of them. And that much history is just, you know, it's right in the stones. It's interesting because I'm kind of going through this day by day to keep my memory straight about what it was. But our third day, we went to a city called Madaba. Now, what Madaba is in... Stop that.
It just popped out. I'm sorry.
Yeah. In the 19th century, I think in the 1880s, 1840s, some Muslims and Christians, I don't think, were getting along very well in a nearby city. And the Christians asked permission to pick up and move to a site that was abandoned, but that had been historically Christian. And this was Madaba. And the Turks told them, by the way, the Turks, not popular in Jordan. If you really want to hear, you know, it's like the Irish versus the English. They do not like Turks. Okay. But the Turks told the Christians they could rebuild churches on the footprints of any church that had already existed.
Oh, okay.
So they start to excavate and they find this map, this mosaic map. It's now called the Madaba map, and it's the earliest map of ancient Palestine. And it's got all these name places. And what I'm going to write about when I write about it, because I did some of my own research, is that the map was based on Eusebius, which a lot of things there aren't grasping, that the Onomatochron was a thing, a gazetteer that Eusebius created of just all the names in the Bible, of place names in the Bible, and where they were and where they're mentioned. So you find this gigantic map, which is originally 2 million pieces. It's on the floor of St. George's Church, Orthodox Church in Madaba. But it's the earliest representation of the Holy Land, and you've got facts that archaeologists still use, such as the position of the Cardo and of the Nia, you know, the church in Jerusalem, and all these different places are reflected on this ancient map. The map is weird because Egypt at one point kind of, the map's oriented east to west, as all ancient maps are, along the axis of the Holy Land with Jerusalem in the center, but then they get to Egypt and it kind of turns. So the map's a bit of a mess, but you can identify these places and all of these biblical locations because the map was made about the 6th century. So when they went to create this church, they dug it up and found this ancient map that had been hidden under rubble for all these years.
Huh.
And it's major, well, I don't know how major, but it's a nice tourist attraction. And there's a lot of wonderful mosaics in the church that are as big a draw as the map.
Really, really fascinating mosaics in ancient synagogues as well. There's one I forget the name of the synagogue now. I'd have to go look it up. But Dura Europa. That's it. It's an ancient synagogue, and what's interesting about it is that, among other things, It makes use of the zodiac.
Right. We encountered that in a couple of churches, actually.
Well, zodiac imagery figures in Jewish imagery. It goes all the way back to the Book of Numbers. So the tribes of Israel were arranged around the tabernacle in a way that was intended to be reminiscent of the zodiac, because when you speak in Scripture of the Lord of hosts, what's envisioned there is the stars in procession in the zodiac symbolize the heavenly hosts, the angelic hosts.
Right.
And so when the Old Testament actually the Book of Revelation as well gives imagery of the heavenly hosts, and you see this, for example, in the Book of Revelation, you'll see, and this will show up as well as in the symbolism of the Gospels. So the lion and the ox and the eagle, these are zodiac signs. And it's not, the idea is not, hey, let's all cast horoscopes. The idea is that the heavenly hosts are symbolized by the stars in the heavens.
Sure, and it represented
angelic hosts.
A knowable order, and so it repeats itself, you know. And we found that in a Byzantine church too. You find pagan imagery just key to the seasons, like a mosaic of the goddess Ceres to stand for, you know, spring or summer, actually, probably, you know, because of she was a cereal god. And so these things were. It was just their lingua franca. It's how they understood things. It wasn't necessarily a syncretism. It was just a way of means of expression. Yeah. But Madam is very impressive. It's small. It's probably not visited all that much, and it certainly wasn't while we were there. But you know, it's the map is important, very important historically, just because it shows the layouts and places of lands where no other map does, but also because it's based on even more ancient sources. So,
yeah.
But that afternoon we went to Mount Nebo.
Ah.
Now Mount Nebo was where Moses, as far as Moses was allowed, where he first saw the promised land, and somewhere in the hills below we were standing, tradition holds that's where he's buried. Now, the Bible tells us Moses is buried. No one knows where his tomb is, you know. But it was somewhere down there. And the opposing hill where we were looking for, there's a little Franciscan chapel there where we had a beautiful Mass of St. Moses with a Franciscan priest, Father Fergus, you know. And yes, he was Father Fergus, and he had a lovely accent. They've just built, it just opened last week. We missed the opening of it, a grand new kind of cathedral there right on top of Mount Nebo with all new mosaics. But on the opposite hill is where legend or lore, whichever you want, tells us was the high place where Balaam's ass spoke, you know, was where the high place of the balls. So you're looking at these sites, and when you go over to the other side of this particular hill on Mount Nebo, which isn't a hill, it's a mountain, you know, you can see to the Dead Sea, you can see to Israel, you can see, you know, all of these areas spread out before you into the Holy Land, and you realize that's, you know, that's what Moses saw when he first came, and that's as much as he got to see.
Yeah.
You know, and it's a striking thing. It really doesn't.
That's amazing, really, though, you know, to stand in that place. That's overwhelming.
It is an overwhelming thing. And the problem, I'll say, with the trip was that we moved at such a clip that even with our quiet moments, which they did schedule in, they weren't rushing us from place to place. But I still feel like a week later, I'm still absorbing spiritually what it all meant. And I mean, I was there in the moment, as it were, you know,
right,
thinking through all this. But you can't process it. You really can't, especially if you're a lifelong Christian. If this is the stories you've known and the people that when they suddenly smack you in the face, you're stunned for a little while and you're thinking, my gosh. And over there, later on, we were driving and somebody said, and we couldn't. It's now under a mosque, I believe, but somebody says Aaron is buried up there.
Ah, just, you know, that's a casual toss off. Oh, over there.
Oh, I didn't even mention on the way out our first day, we stopped by a river. It was the Jabbok. It was the river by where Jacob wrestled the angel. It was, you know, this is all, again, this is tradition. And as you explore a lot of it, some of it holds up very well, you know, yes, that these sites were considered significant and marked early on, especially Bethany beyond the Jordan. There's no question that this is the location when I get to talk about that. I guess I should move along at a faster clip because we're coming to the end. But
that's all right. We got one more second.
Great.
Mount Nebo was, you know, it was a wonderful, another wonderful moment, you know. But the next day was the one I was worried about because I have terrible arthritis. And I wasn't sure I was going to make it, but I did. By the grace of God, I had no pain. And that was the miracle of the trip, because we went to Petra. Uh-huh. And you know Petra from the end, obviously, of Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. And you don't know it at all, because the location you see when they reach, you know, what's called the treasury, it was actually a tomb. When you go to your right, it continues for like another 5 miles. You have to walk in. It's called you walk in for about a mile just past some ancient pagan tombs, like an obelisk tomb and rock cut.
Rats. Right. Well, we will continue talking about Petra when we return. You're listening to Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea, here today. Absolutely. With Sherry Antonetti and Tom McDonald, and we'll be back right after this.
If you enjoy listening to Mark Shea and all of his wonderful co-hosts here on Connecting the Dots, then consider becoming a friend of the show and provide your support today. Go to breadboxmedia.com and click on Friend of the Show. Thank you.
Oh, and welcome back. Your host, Mark Shea, and we are here today with Tom McDonald and Sherry Antonetti. And, you know, before we go on, I have to say that this is for some people, this is a landmark day in American religious history, because today is the day that Jack Chick, God rest his soul, died today. Jack is the guy who put the fun in fundamentalism. He was nutty as a jaybird and full of crazy theories about the evil Catholic conspiracy behind everything. We Catholics did it all, and we did it well in Jack's universe. We invented Islam and founded the Nazi Party and killed Lincoln, and we did everything.
What didn't we do?
We did. It was bad. We were behind it. And
that's right. All while eating the death cookie.
Oh, wow.
He has gone to his reward and suddenly realized his many mistaken and false things that he said about us Catholics. At any rate, it is our joy and our duty as Catholics to pray for the dead, and so we pray for the soul of Jack Chick as well.
Amen.
And may God have mercy on him. I don't want to take too much away from your story of
Yes, Petra. We're in Petra.
Yes. When last we left our hero, Tom McDonald,
he was about
wearing
to
his kaffir and his Indiana Jones hat.
His fez.
Right. Fezes are cool.
Yes. But, they are cool.
Yeah. Anyway. Petra's not to be imagined. If you think you've seen it, you haven't seen it. You know, you enter through what's called the Sikh, S-I-Q, and it's this long red rock, a chasm carved by erosion, and it's got a lot of carvings in it. It's got a lot of There's tombs there too. What Petra is, when you get through this, the Seek, and you come out to what's called the Treasury, is this big open space, and you enter it, and suddenly you're from the darkness into the light, into this giant place, and the effect must have been amazing to the people who came. This was the ancient kingdom of the Nabataeans, and Nabataeans were basically sort of late cousins of Edomites, you know, if you want to put this into biblical perspective as who related to who. Okay. But the Nabataeans...
Well, and that, by the way, one of the linguistic ties that you find, the Edomites, Edom means red.
Right.
So the story about Edom is that he's called Edom because he's, you know, he's got red hair and he's a ruddy man, but also the land where the Edomites wind up living is a lot of red sandstone.
It is red, and I've still got some of it. I just can't get it out of my shoes.
Ah.
It goes on and on. My time I hiked that day, and I didn't even make it all the way up to what's called the monastery, but it's just another tomb. It's 1,000 steps up, and I knew I wasn't going to push my knees that far. But it's still occupied by Bedouin trying to sell stuff, and I was stopped by one. And oh my gosh, you might hear a lot of barking soon.
Okay.
I was stopped by one.
It's not you. Yeah.
I was stopped by one who tried to sell me something, and he pointed halfway up the cliff, 50, 60 feet to a rock cut tomb. He said, I was born and grew up there.
Wow.
This entire red sandstone thing carved out of the rock is, there you go,
worth howling over.
Yeah, is filled with these tombs carved straight into the rock, and I couldn't not climb into some because I was there. So I'm climbing around inside, and they mostly smell like goat. And but it goes on and on and on and on, and then there's more, and then you're like, okay, there's more, and you come down, and there's a Roman theater, there's a temple to Artemis, maybe? Athena? No, Artemis was in Jerash. I think this one might have been Athena. There's Arab temples to Arab gods, you know, gods of wine and stuff like that. And there are Byzantine churches there. I climbed one, and that one's under restoration, and there's one a little bit higher than that. And they've got beautiful mosaics all over them, and it just never ends. Petra is a gigantic... It's not just the Treasury facade or the Seek on the way in. It just keeps going, and there's tomb after tomb after tomb, and you can climb in any of them. There's no docents. I mean, there's nobody there except Bedouins, and the Bedouins just want to sell you stuff.
Yeah.
And I was actually finding exposed pottery that had been washed down by the rains. I mean, because I can usually recognize it when I see it on the surface, and I saw it, and, you know, there's just pottery there, you know, I have no idea how old, but so Petra's a marvel. And the last big thing, there's more, you know, you see the Dead Sea, and I didn't get to float in it because I forgot my bathing suit. So shame on me.
Okay.
But I probably would anyway, because I hate swimming. But, you know, the last big thing that strikes you is Bethany beyond the Jordan. And the way they've structured it, it looks very plain, but and you see a Byzantine church, and there's this 14-meter deep cistern that feeds a baptismal pool up at the top. And there's hermit caves all over. But the first thing you see when you're starting to climb down is an entire field of reeds blown by the wind.
Oh, my goodness.
And I'm like, they're all bent. Wow. Thanks, God.
That interesting. Nice thing.
Thank you for saying that.
And, of course, the comment that Jesus makes.
I know. That's what I'm saying.
About John the Baptist. What did you go out to see? A reed blown by the wind?
Right. And there it is. There's a whole field of them.
Isn't that interesting?
Oh, my goodness.
The wind. But they've created a path along these little rivulets. John wouldn't have baptized in the Jordan because the Jordan was too quick running. He would have baptized in a little tributary or rivulet. And what they found were these four pylons that were standing up in a weird place, their foundations, and they were obviously built over water. Mm-hmm. And at the base of the pylons, there were perhaps hundreds of little graffiti crosses carved over centuries into this foundation, and the water ran under it. And it was very, very obvious that not only was this the area, But this was the actual spot that somebody had marked it and built a shrine right over it. That this was where Jesus had met John and where the Holy Trinity had manifested to John in this spot on earth. And it's a whole lot of nothing when you look at it. You know, it's there's not much water, especially in the drier seasons. There's just these four foundation things, which are very peculiar because they were obviously meant to lift something above the water so that you could walk under it to be baptized. And then there would have been something above it where you could have gone later, I imagine. And these little tributaries is generous. They're just basically creeks running off it. And that is where John would have done his baptizing. And that is where John would have baptized Jesus because people set down rocks. You know, if you read the ancient, if you read the new Old Testament, you know, where they crossed the river where they with the ark, drop a rock here so I remember, you know.
Right.
And the interesting thing about that story is that took place at the exact same location.
Interesting.
That along with where Elijah rolled up his cloak and struck the Jordan is, you know, legend has it. That's, again, in the same area. Now, when you get back, you go down to the Jordan proper. The Jordan itself is not much of a river, but straight on the opposite side, that's the dividing line between Israel and Jordan. And so each of them can, you know, share a piece of the Jordan. But that's not the actual physical location of the baptism and John's ministry. The Jordan, it would have been too big for that at the time. And it would have overflowed its banks too at different times. So, I mean, you could, you know, toss a stick into Israel from where I was standing.
Yeah.
You know, and Peter, Jesser Smith of the National Catholic Register, fully submerged into the Jordan. He went all the way in over his head.
Really?
Yeah. And we reached that through the Russia House, where I got cool icons of the severed head of John the Baptist. There's a Russian pilgrim.
Oh, my goodness.
I saw that. I saw that picture.
Love John the Baptist icons.
Okay.
So anyway, I don't know. Did I make this point? When you're making the way through along these rivulets through John's wilderness, they've crafted the path and they didn't fully clear it so that you have to bow and bend to get through it on your way.
So I didn't know that. That's,
you
know,
that's
like,
cool.
Like in the church in Jerusalem, it's a Church of the Holy Sepulchre. You have to kneel to approach it, you know, so the penitent men will pass.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
That
so
is
it's
well, and they also probably don't have a giant blade that severs your head if you don't do that. So that
I haven't seen it, but I would not.
He was kneeling, so there you go.
Okay.
All right. One quick one on the very final big thing I did, which was my Waterloo, because it's a lot higher than it looks. Is Macarius, which is a giant hill overlooking the Dead Sea, and it's high. First of all, it's a 2-hour drive up. Then you put your faith in Jordanian brakes. I'll tell you that much. And then there's another hill you have to climb. And when you get to the top of that hill, you find what's left of Herod's palace, where John the Baptist was decapitated.
Okay.
Oh, my goodness.
And that's the location. There's no question. It has a commanding view. It's got pillars. It's got foundations. John was kept in prison in one of these caves around the area, or perhaps in one of the cistern-like places.
Is John buried in Jordan?
John's head is in three different places. I mean, supposedly John's head is in there's three people claim John's head, I think, in various shrines throughout Europe. As far as John's body, no, John's not buried in Jordan. I don't believe. I'm sure he was carried off long ago. Okay. But John's multiplying heads. It's a miracle. It's the miracle of John's head.
Much for being on the show today, Tom.
It's awesome.
And for regaling us with your cool uncle stories. And I want to thank Sherry Antonetti for being here.
Hello.
Connecting the Dots. Our producer today is Danny Head. And I will be back tomorrow with Mr. Uncle Kitchen. Until then, have a wonderful day. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.